Hello, and welcome to the fifth episode of Hot Topics, a fire and EMS-based podcast. The intent of the podcast and the scope is to share fire and EMS service-related experience of current and retired personnel on a multitude of local, regional, and national subject matter, operational items, and any other pertinent fire service-related subject matter. It is not the intent of this podcast to second-guess or be the Monday morning quarterback to any operational decisions made by an incident commander. So we won't be doing any Monday morning quarterbacking of anything that went on the street. A little bit of my background: third generation fire department in Hopkinton, and my last 7 years after 44 years of service to Hopkinton was as the chief. And I was blessed to have two brothers, a father, a grandfather, two uncles, and four cousins who worked with me at different times during my career. So it's like back to our first episode when we talked about multi-generational service to the community. Today, I'm very blessed to have my brother Fran in here. Fran's a retired firefighter EMT from Hopkinton and known to everyone, like I said, as Fran. A quick review of Fran's bio. Became a basic EMT in 1978, call firefighter in 75 in Hopkinton, and then entered the career service in 1983 and then retired in 2022. He's been a Mass Fire Academy instructor since 1990, and as instructor one, instructor two levels. He's also got a very extensive resume here, and I'm going to just share it very quickly with everybody so they can know the background. Department of Public Health, Hazardous Materials, Personal Protective Equipment, and WMD, Weapons of Mass Destruction instructor since 2003. A technical rescue specialist for confined space rescue, structural collapse, trench rescue, and high and low angle rope rescue. And Fran's the man to do that. If you need it done, I was always very blessed that when I had Fran on scene, if we had something going on, but we had to do that. Mass Fire District 14 technical rescue team from 1999 until he retired, and also with the Mass District 14 dive team from 99 until he retired. He has technical rescue team certifications, National Pro Board, Fire Instructor 1 and 2, Fire Officer 1, Fire Inspector 1, Rope Rescue Technician, Live Burn Instructor. So Fran's done it all. And he's also a Dive Rescue International certification with Vehicle and Small Plane Recovery, Dry Suit Operations, PADI, which is a dive group that certifies divers at anywhere from a basic underwater to advanced and then some specialty training. PADI Advanced Open Water is one of them, and also Ice Rescue. He's a International Municipal Signalmen's Association, which is kind of like fire alarm, the old style, technician level one. And he has more incident command stuff than I've ever even seen somebody have here. So he's very well versed in all aspects of incident command, the National Incident Management System, and then also Scott Aviation. He was a field level maintenance. If we had something go wrong with the SCBA at the time, we had Scott's. It's changed there now in Hopkinton. He was able to fix it and or say, we need to get this to be back in service with stuff. So I welcome Fran. It's like I've been waiting to get Fran on here. His schedule allows him to be in multiple places during the year. So it's like he's very, since he retired. Fran, how long have you been retired?
Almost 3 years now.
Yeah. Where do you, how do you spend your time since you've been retired?
Well, currently, once I retired, I moved full down to the state of Tennessee. It's a little bit nicer down there during the winter. Obviously, we don't have to deal with snow. Maybe a rattlesnake here or there, but not much snow down there.
Yeah. Instead of a snow shovel, you got a stick to keep the snakes away.
I do have the only snow shovel on the block.
That doesn't surprise me, Fran. Please describe to me the time you spent on the call department in career as a firefighter MT. What some of the things that stick in your mind in that whole transition that you went to, and then for the longevity that you were there?
Well, fortunately, when you and I started back in the mid-70s, we were fortunate to have some of the best people in the fire service as our chiefs and trainers, between the Bartlett's, the Pines, Stewart's, you know. So we learned a lot back then. We were more capable of doing live fire training back then with the acquired structures and stuff around town, which they kind of back away from these days because of liability issues, whatever, but we learned a lot about firefighting from gentlemen like that and others on the department around the state. I myself have traveled around the country taking some training classes, so you learn a lot from different parts of the country, even different parts of Massachusetts when you're out there teaching and so forth. But the transition was not bad. Literally, you come in one day and you're a call firefighter, and next week you could be a career firefighter. So nothing really changed from transitioning from one to the other. The fact that driving all the apparatus back when Chief Stewart, you had to be trained in every piece of equipment on the apparatus before you could actually drive it.
Yep, be tested on it. Yep.
Be tested. He would take it for a ride himself. And we had one, the old Diamond T, which was a non-synchromatic transmission. If people don't understand a five-speed standard, that you had to sync by RPMs and stuff when you shifted it. If you couldn't do that coming down the South Street Hill, you weren't allowed to drive the truck.
Yeah, you know? And it had the overdrive.
Without coming to a complete stop and putting it back into gear, you had to get it back. He would just kick it out of gear driving down the hill, so get it back into gear. But that's what we learned back then.
Yeah.
It was a whole different thing.
I can remember that truck was, you'd go to Milford Mutual Aid and get probably the tennis courts at the high school and hit it into overdrive, and you didn't touch it till you got to 495.
Yeah, and that's back when we were riding the back step, because once we hit the high school, you could see the fire in Milford that we were going to. You could see the glow in the sky.
Oh, so many times. It was like
a four-story mill or an eight-story high-rise over there that was burning fully involved at the time.
Yeah, no, a lot of memories going to work with those people over there. It doesn't get any better. No,
they're excellent to work with. Ashley and Milford did a lot of fires.
My favorite
both
ones.
Communities.
Your training experience is extensive, Fran. Is there a subject matter that is your favorite to teach?
I really enjoyed the tech rescue aspect. That's why back in 99, the Hopkins and Chief and the Ashland Chief asked me to create this District 14 tech rescue team because I had some of the training. Because we had started way back to the gentleman in Milford had a heart attack years ago at a brush fire in Milford.
Lieutenant Connors.
And we had to take him off the top of the cliffs with the high rise.
Yeah.
And people will laugh at me now when I say, well, you did that with manila rope.
Yeah.
Which you wouldn't even want to hang off of these days because it does lose 50% of its strength once it gets wet. And we did carry it on the back step, hanging off the rail. But the kind of got me interested in Chief Stewart was a guy that had the knowledge to initially teach me in that. And then the rest of it was self.
Remember that call was
self-taught.
Southbound Section 3, just prior to the high lines there on top of that ledge. Yep, no, I remember that night.
Yeah, it was quite a distance up there.
Yeah.
But the
we had to throw the ladder up and then bring the Stokes down the beam of the ladders, beams of the ladder, I haven't thought about that in a long time, Fran. That brings back a lot of memories.
But like you said, it was always great working with those guys from Milford, and obviously if we're in Ashland, work with them also. We did some great fires with those guys.
And if I remember, that was a brush fire we were in there, and we were working chasing something, and the lieutenant had an issue. God rest his soul. I know he's not with us anymore, but they had some great leaders back then. We were young, and it's also another place that you learned a lot. Fireground and stuff was in Milford. They had a lot of fires, and they had a lot of fires in the type of buildings that we didn't have here. So it was like we were blessed to be able to get that experience and get it. And it was always, you always learn something new going there 2 or 4 o'clock in the morning for something that was ripping. So it was like,
it's not the experience they're going to get anymore. Of course, most of the mills we burned down between Milford and other places that we went to, but it wasn't uncommon to have a 2.5-inch line on the second floor of a mill that was 50% involved in fire just to see if we could knock it down.
You always gave
and
it a
chief
shot.
The chief would say, you got 15 minutes. If not, we're pulling you back out.
Yep.
So
those were the days. Now it's like
now liability. You don't have the buildings burning. They have them in other parts, like when Sock and stuff does that kind of thing down around there, Providence, but not around here much anymore.
Yeah, they go right to defensive now, which is good because I don't think the personnel get to see as many fires like that, so they might not be as comfortable with it. So I think it's just a sign of the times.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, not bad, not bad at all.
You can understand the liability part of it.
Yep.
Church is just going to rebuild it anyway, so...
What sticks in your mind are some of the most memorable incident responses, positive and negative, that we've had to deal with?
There's been quite a few of them over the 48 years I was here, but the some of the larger ones, obviously, the day we were at Shadowbrook for those 8 hours, that fire there, run down the hallway in one of those apartments we kicked the door open to when the fire came out at us.
And chased us out, yeah.
Chased us down the hallway. We went back and got it.
But the line was supposed to be with us, but they got hung up on the door. And it's like, and you and I went down the hall, and then the fire came and chased us. So it was like, yeah, I'll never forget the fire, the smoke doing that thing, like in the main hallway there. And it's, I remember thinking, oh, it's time to go. You know what I mean? And I couldn't hear him behind me with the line or using the line. It got hot, and then I think as we got back to the door, that's when the fire rolled out above us, going down that half a level and then out onto street level. And yep, that was another interesting day. Yeah.
And the people up the hallway said it was pretty interesting watching us scramble up that hallway.
Yeah. But yeah, they said,
it happens.
They said, we're all ready to go. You guys can do the ventilation and we'll take the line. And it was all, if I remember, I think it was at least three. They had gone defensive. And I think it was Chief DiPaolo, if I remember. And
Deputy
awesome
Taddy.
Guy. Yep. Or Taddy, one of them.
Taddy was a deputy.
Oh, okay. And they had gone defensive at that fire, and the lieutenants went and, like, they had a brainstorming session. It was quite loud out in the front, and they said, Chief, we can't write up the building off now. It's only a floor, and it's above. We got to, like, get at it. And he said, well, I'll give you, like you said before, you got 15 minutes. And they handpicked a crew. They took you and I to do the ventilation, and they had at least three lieutenants on the 2.5-inch line to go in and give it a really good hit. And they got the line got somehow stuck under the door when they first started to go in. So we were up the stairs and up the hall and gone, expecting them to be right behind us. And it was like they were delayed just long enough where we needed to, like, beat feet and, like, just beat the fire back to the door. I remember that. I can remember hearing it come because it was doing the old roaring sound like you used to hear occasionally. And it's like,
That was a fun part of the job back then.
Yeah. It makes you smile because it's that. That's, and you get back, once you get back, it's done deal. Nothing happened, let's go at it again. You know what I mean? And it's like, oh my God. Hadn't thought about that one in a long time either, Fran. But nope.
It only happened to us twice that we got run out.
Yep.
That one on Apple Tree Hill in Ashland.
Oh.
We had to bail out the second floor and the ladder.
Yep. That was like
we lost our water supply.
I remember Ricky saying, I think they can't make the stairs inside. I think you and Fran can make the window. I said, and the only thing I remember asking him was, like, put the ladder on the sill, not up through the window. And that's what made the difference that morning. It's like, Ashland had their duty crew was out on a medical, and they got a call for a structure fire and heavy fire on the Division 2 in a residential building. And it was blowing out horizontal on the Delta side, maybe 4-6 feet, whatever it was. McMillan says, can you make the window? I said, put the ladder the right way, we'll give it a shot. And we went up, hit it, jumped the sill, crawled across, went by the line at the top of the stairs that they were fighting to get the second floor. And all of a sudden the line went dead. There was a problem, issue with a fire hydrant out in front. Someone shut something off or whatever. And the fire beat us back to the window. So it's like, again, up and over the sill and down the ladder, and that was an interesting morning too.
For the listeners, why we did that is simply there was a report of the homeowner was supposedly still on the second floor of that structure.
Yeah.
So that's the only reason we went in that window, because we had to do a search to make sure that he wasn't there, which he wasn't.
No, he didn't end up to be, but we searched that first room and then went by the guys with that initial line on the stairwell. And I don't think we were 5 feet by him when the line went dead. And instinctively, you fall back to the go out where you came in. You know what I mean? And it's like probably would have been maybe a little bit closer when I thought about it the many times afterwards, go to the stairs and go down. But you instinctively taught to follow the line back, get control of the hose, follow it back, and get to your egress point. And it's like... Nope, there was a lot of fire there that morning, too. Yeah.
The intent of it was pretty funny, because if you watch the news video after one of the reporters, was, I don't remember what station it was, when Kay and I went up over the windowsill into the room, all you heard the reporter say on that video was, oh, shit, where'd they go? There was so much fire blowing out the window. But, again, there was a report of somebody on the second floor, so we had to get in.
We had a good line, we had good water, and it's like we were able to move the fire with the water that we had. It was... And just some type of a incident out with the water supply someplace in front of the building. So it's like, yep, nope. I haven't thought about those things in a long time, Fran. It's like you open up that little door I have in the back there. I keep that door shut all the time. Yeah.
But there's a lot of incidents like that throughout the years when you go, yep. You know, whether you were in Ashland or Milford or Hopkin, and there was always something different that was happening. So.
But I also think it was important because going back to what you said early in the episode, we had the right training, we had the right leaders in place outside to be able to do that. You had trust in your officers and you had trust in your incident commanders. And it was maybe even back before the time that we had the incident command system, you know what I mean, yeah. Some of it. But I remember that, again, that's one of the strengths that they had as leaderships, as leaders, is they saw that structure that the incident command system brought, and Bobby and Ricky went and got the training on that and brought it to us, which seemed, once we saw it, it seemed so natural. And in those days, if you were working in a building and you did the job that you did, it was not uncommon to take a stroll through the building to see what was going on and go up a floor, down a floor to see what was going on. Now it's strict that you finish your function and you get in touch with command and say, we'll finish the function. What do you want us to do? And they'll tell you to come out or go here or go there. You know, it's like, I don't want to say it was freelancing, but it kind of was. And you're just going, oh, let's go see what's going on over here or over there. And now that's strictly forbidden. So it's like, and that's a good thing. But in those days, we, excuse me, we learned all our lessons the hard way. You know what I mean? We needed to have that structure on the fire ground. And those guys went and learned it and passed it on to us. And I think that the accountability was a big thing. And when that came out finally, and that's going to be in a future episode that I go on by myself. I'm just going to talk about accountability and show them the accountability boards and how they transitioned from the magnets to the now they have the Velcros, you know what I mean, which is fire district-wide. They all use the same one. We used to run into, we had magnets, they had tags, so you just keep them and make sense of it at a command post. But that's one of the ones I want to talk about down the road that was near and dear to my heart, which was led by Chief Tuohy in Milford. He started the accountability boards with the Tactron boards, and then... And we were blessed to learn that, and it was only made, again, the structure made huge sense. You knew where everybody was, and as I moved on and became an incident commander, I felt it was my job to know where everyone was in the building. If we had something happen, I knew that your company or that company or this company was in that area that just had a partial failure or something like that. And we were blessed that we never had any of that serious stuff. We had some minor ones, but you knew where everyone was by looking at the board. I can tell where Engine 1's crew was. I could tell where the ladder crew was. I could tell where Milford Engine 5's crew was. And that was, Chief Tuohy was the first one, John Tuohy, to grasp that and see the importance of that. And once he shared it with us, it was just made great sense to like continue that. And
It was critical, especially like go back to 2002 when we had that building collapse on Main Street
yep.
from the natural gas leak that blew up and we ended up trapping those two kids. We had to do an interior search of a collapsed structure, like literally 40% or 50% of the house was on the sidewalk. When the house blew up, it took out three windows in the fire station. It was so close.
Yeah.
But the ended up landing on the sidewalk. When we arrived on scene, Kenny and I lived on Grove Street at the time, so we were one of the first ones to arrive as the off-duty crew. And him and I got out of the car and we're walking across. We didn't even know if it was, realized it was that house right there that had just exploded and collapsed. But he made a comment to me, and I says, I don't know, to me it smells just like New York City, because I had spent a couple weeks working down in New York on 9/11 with some New York crews. And that's what it was. You could smell the asbestos in the air because this house had asbestos shingles on it. Which fortunately, Kenny and I grew up in this house back when, prior to high school years, all our grow-up years were at this house at 65 Main Street. So we were doing, I was assigned as a rescue sector officer at the time by the chief at the time. As I was doing a search on the B side of the building, the mother and father came crawling out of the rubble, looked at me and said, my two kids are still in there. So obviously, we had to make entry into the structure. So I went back and talked to the chief, and he said, okay, go ahead. So we crawled in and through and up and around some of the collapsed lumber to find the two children, which both had already had passed away. And after the incident, the medical examiner said their small lungs were gone when the building blew up. Their lungs couldn't take that kind of weight from the explosion. So they were kind of like dead instantly. But unfortunately, it was a downside. A lot of people had to wait the 5 or 6 hours before we could get in there to get the gas shut off, because the house fell on all the gas boxes in front of the house. So gas company had to find the old mains and the old shutoffs. It takes a while. It's just stuff that we have to deal with in the fire service.
Yeah. That was a three-story building there with apartments on the third floor. And when the gas blew, it took the two, the B wall and the D wall, and completely flipped them upside down out. And the first floor and the second floor pancaked, and the third floor come down and then slid out over the gas shutoffs in the front. So we couldn't get to the gas shutoff for that particular building. So the gas company came in and worked feverishly to shut off, pinch the gas lines on both sides to get it shut off. But they were working in the building there while the gas was flowing, and we had to make one of those really, really tough decisions. They got one of the girls really quick, and then they had their hands on the second one, but they had to do cutting with tools to get the wood so that she was able to come out. And we had to do that risk analysis where it was, we had nothing to gain because, like Fran said, they were already gone. But the guys were so focused. I can remember crawling in the front. You could get on the front corner and crawl under that, where it can't leave it out onto the sidewalk. So it's kind of like a little space like this in the front here, this little space you could crawl under. And I remember my first time I crawled in, I could see three sets of shoes working. All the toes were down. You could see the back of the boots from the turnout gear. And they were all said they had their hands on it, but it wasn't feasible. So we had to make that decision. We risk a lot to save a lot, but we don't risk a lot when there's nothing that's savable. And they, like I said, they got the first little girl out really quick. I think they were 2 and 4, if I remember. And it was just one of those decisions you got to make, you know? So it's really, really challenging. And it's like, we had to go out, regroup, shut the gas off, and then go back in and get her. And the guys did and it was most of the guys that are there were the nucleus for the tech team, which had just started and done some collapse rescue training, like not a month or two before the incident. And it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I can remember Fran and I lived maybe a quarter mile, third of a mile from downtown here on Grove Street. And I can remember it's in July, it was warm. We had the north window open, which faced Main Street at the house. And I could feel a concussion. I could hear a noise, didn't know what it was, but I could feel a concussion on my chest when I was asleep in bed at home. And I get up and started getting dressed before they even did an alarm. And Marie says, oh, where are you going? I said, oh, I bet you we're going to the LNG plant. I thought the LNG plant first, and that was, and as I drove in through Colollis, for the people from Hopkins would know that, in the back to come into the firehouse, I wonder why I can see the gas station looking across. There's a lot of dust in the air. Why can I see the gas station? And it still hadn't kind of like clicked with me what was going on. And I went and got my car in the station. I'm like, there's all glass all over the floor in the station from the front windows blowing out. It blew all the glass in. And it was all throughout the floor on the firehouse. So went out and went to work. I think it was a 24-hour work period we had there. And they tore the house down. And I remember saying to Chief Doherty, get it out of here. I don't want to look at it, you know. And we worked, stood by while they removed it. And Harvey was very helpful with all the dumpsters. And Pete LaJoy in running the backhoe from Lada's. And
what you see Lada, yeah.
Yeah, and
Harvey's brought their dumpsters right up for us so we could get that building out of there so people didn't have to drive by that afternoon looking.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, that's like another summer memories I haven't thought about in a long time. Like I said before, I keep that door shut. Right now, I'm going to get into a couple of questions I have from our audience. And one was from Mike in Hopkinton. Why are all of our firefighters trained as paramedics? I thought that was a very good question because and as you'll see in a later episode, we'll talk about it with the first Chief Doherty, who started us with the ALS program in 2006 in November. But I thought it was always invaluable to go to the ALS, this is my opinion, and have cross-trained personnel. They could go out and deliver that needed skill at a very high level on the street, but we also cross-trained them as firefighters. They went to the academy, did the 11-week career recruit training program, and then came in and so we had them cross-trained. If the engine had to move or the ladder had to move or the tanker, these people were on it and could do that. But if it was also any type of EMS call, the medics could triage it, and if they needed to, work at the ALS level. So it was a really good program. It's been outstanding for the town of Hopkinton. And the one thing that sticks in my mind, I remember coming back after my hip operation and going on one of the first calls with the medics, and it was the current chief, Gary Doherty, and he says to me, he says, this guy's really circling the drain, deputy, and we need to, like, we're going to cardio-invert him. And I'm like, I didn't even know what it meant to cardio-invert at that time. You know what I mean? It was a brand-new program, and they actually hooked him up to the EKG machine, shocked him, stopped his heart, and then restarted it. And by the time we got to the hospital, and the two medics went in the back, I drove it. And by the time we got to the hospital, the gentleman was sitting up talking to the medics going into the ED. So it's like I was sold instantly on the program and would support it my entire career. And they do a fantastic job. And I'm going to finish up with my last question here. Is from Bill in Hopkinton. How many incidents did Hopkinton Fire personnel respond to in 2024? I think it was just shy of 3,500. That's what I was, one of the guys told me. Do you remember how much it was?
In 2024?
Yeah. No, okay.
That was after my time.
Yep, okay. But so they're really busy now over there, busier than when we started. When Fran and I started, we were the only one in the firehouse on our shift, so it was like now they sometimes during the day have 13. But I want to thank Fran for coming with us today. I've been looking forward to this one. This is always a special one. I always so much enjoyed working with Fran and all the stuff that we did on the street, and it's like it's good to reminisce a little bit. Sorry for the little bit of the war stories that we had, but it's like those just come out when we talk about it, when we get together. So it's like thank you for watching episode 5 of Hot Topics, and I will see you at episode 6. Thank you very much, and have a great day.